Hello and welcome in to the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler. This is episode number 35, and today we're having a lengthy and really great discussion with assistive technology industry veterans Mike Calvo and Matt Campbell. If you've been around the assistive technology for a while, you will absolutely know the names of Mike Calvo and Matt Campbell. They've been instrumental in shaping what we have today in terms of accessibility. And I'm delighted to have both Mike and Matt join us today on our podcast. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know if I can live up to that. Thank you.
Well, listen, great to have you, Mike. Now, you're in Florida, and, you know, we're asking everybody, we have to ask, it continues to be a very crazy times we're living in. How has COVID and the whole experience been for you? Are you kind of working from home forever at this stage?
Well, Matt and I have been working from home together for 20 years, different places, and so this is the whole lock-in thing isn't that crazy. It's just the world around it. I'm in Florida, which depending on the day of the week is either number two or number three in the United States for COVID infections. Have had a number of friends that have had it, thank God, knock on the wood, that no one that I know of has passed, but my heart goes out to so many that have. Mm-hmm. So it is more surreal because of its surrealness than just the kind of the changes, you know what I'm saying? And we've been doing this home thing, this home working thing for a long time.
While I did work from home for many years, back in the days of Saratech, I did go through, almost 3 years of being in an office while I was at Microsoft. And so, COVID, as probably all tech companies did, Microsoft responded to COVID by saying everyone who can work from home should. Mm. So that was a change for me from getting out and going to the office every day and then going out sometimes on weekends too to do karaoke, which is one of my favorite things to do, being basically shut in my apartment most of the time.
All right, guys, it's great to have you both here. And we've a lot to talk about, but I do want to put it into context for, you know, because there may be people listening who haven't heard of you guys before. So, Mike, you're synonymous with things like System Access and SA2Go and RIM and RAM and the days of the, I used to listen a lot to the Ciro Talk podcast. But you were Ciro Tech, right?
That's correct. Ciro Tech was started in 2001, and we released our first product called the Freedom Box, which was kind of a predecessor, I would say, to the Echo. It did a lot of what the Echo does really fancy now, pretty kludgy back then, but wow, it was really amazing and cutting edge for its time. And, you know, I want to be real clear. I don't write any code. Anything that I have come up with as what we say, the dreamer, Matt Campbell is the doer. And that guy right there has been able to bring to life any of the crazy AT ideas that I've been able to come with over the last 20 years. And for that, there's no amount of gratitude for me as a friend, as a partner now in business, but also as a member of this community. Matt's contributions have been amazing, and they're going to continue.
Were you always keen to, because just from kind of watching some of the stuff that you guys were putting out as Ciro Tech, were you always looking at sort of breaking those barriers around inaccessible material? Because there always seemed to be an element of getting access to as much content as possible for your customers.
Sure. I mean, Jonathan Mosen talked to me early on and said, Mike, really what we need here is community. We need people to be able to collectively get together in places and chat and do what we're doing right here. And I really took that to heart as Jonathan continues to do today. And I said, as we became a community, we realized the variety of information that the community wanted to consume and was unable to consume via for a number of different reasons. And in the last 20 years, we've seen everything from the Kindle become totally accessible to, you know, EPUB becoming a very open standard. So even when the Kindle is not available or it's not necessary, you can get stuff in EPUB. We have always wanted to provide as much access in a portable means to people as possible. And we were the first cloud services to do that at Serotech because we focused on the needs of the consumer as opposed to people at work or at school.
Matt, may I ask you as a developer, and I know we've been just chatting even off air about the amount of stuff you've been involved in, but you were developing at Serotech for, I know, Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, I think some of the Amazon stuff. It must have been a lot going on there for you.
Yeah, I did get to work with basically every major platform, including near the end of my tenure at Serotech, the Amazon Echo platform, as you said. I sometimes, perhaps overly self-deprecatingly, say that I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. I think probably that last part is inaccurate. I've at least mastered Windows accessibility, if nothing else, as evidenced by where I went after Serotech.
All right, and I do want to just spend a minute or two talking about that, because I know from reading the bio on the NUMA website, your bio, some of the work you did around Microsoft Edge, giving us the level of access that we have today. It's now my browser of choice, and I'm sure many people's. You went to Microsoft and really brought that level of accessibility, I suppose, to a new level.
Well, the turnaround in Edge specifically, I had nothing to do with that. The Edge team pulled a rabbit out of their hat a couple of years ago when they decided to switch from what we call the old Edge HTML engine, or codenamed Spartan, switch from that to Chromium, and I kind of breathed a sigh of relief when that happened, because I knew that it was going to be more accessible, especially with the third-party screen readers. What I did do I joined the Windows accessibility team, which owns the Narrator screen reader and the UI automation accessibility API, among other things. And probably the most high profile change that I can claim that I made was implementing the modern keyboard layout in Narrator, which makes the Narrator keyboard commands a lot more like JAWS or NVDA or System Access.
Well, thank you, Matt. And it's wonderful to see how proactive Microsoft are being around accessibility and giving us huge amounts of access. Mike, you kind of, for me anyway, you sort of slipped off my radar for a while. And then I saw NUMA Solutions. I think I saw something on Twitter just before Christmas. And I had sent it on to our CEO because I said, oh, Mike is back. You know, this stuff sounds really interesting. Did you kind of go away and have a little rest for a while, or what did you do for a few years?
I did. Well, I went through a bunch of personal stuff, got divorced and went through a few things personally. As I was telling you before, Serotech was a great ride for us, but it was also very difficult emotionally for myself. My business partner got very ill. It was the community. We had some challenges with philosophical differences within the organization, which led to a walkout. There were just a number of challenges. And I just said, you know, okay, this is a place to step off. In 2017, Microsoft was hiring people for Narrator. And Matt, of course, who never looked for a job. I mean, this guy's been with me, my right hand, for years. I'm like, dude, you know, go apply for the job, please, because this ship is winding down. And, you know, and if you get the job, you're fired, you know. So he got the job, of course. And I did what I needed to do to shut Serotec down. Serotec's been shut down for a while. We've been serving the needs of our users, of course, because many people wake up every day to use our technologies just to live their life. And I couldn't, as long as those products were at least self-sustaining, I couldn't shut them down. And Matt agrees with me. And that's why we still have it today, is the Cero community. But I really needed Stuart to reevaluate and see if I was relevant in our community anymore. If I really, you know, had a place at the table of making an accessibility difference, and came to realize that, yeah, there's a lot of digital information that people don't have access to. And after talking to Matt and going through a couple of iterations of what we currently call Scribe, we have something that I think is a world changer for the world of digital accessibility.
I think there's a lot of digital information, Mike, that people don't have access to. There's an awful lot of information that people have kind of half access to. And we talked before coming on air, and because there's a blog post on the NUMA website. And I mean, there's lots of stuff there that I highly recommend people should read it. But there's a piece you've written about PDFs and about, I always say to people, when you open a PDF, you're never quite sure if it's going to be, if you're going to be able to read the thing, maybe half read the thing. If it will open
PDFs are like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Right. So there's an awful lot of stuff up there. You know, someone will send you an electronic document. It's a PDF and it doesn't work, or it half works. Were you finding that kind of, obviously you were finding it frustrating. Were you finding that it was happening more?
Well, yeah. I mean, as a blind community, we all deal with this. I mean, this is a kind of a, And even the sighted community, PDF is kind of the format you love to hate, right? Because even on your phone or whatever, it just does not always scale well. When you're blind and dealing with untagged PDFs, and tags are simply what tell your screen reader what's a heading, what's a list, what's a table, that's put in there by very well-meaning people usually, either after the fact or during the creation of the PDF. If that's not available, Adobe will do its best sometimes to tag that PDF. But if not, you got to figure out how to skin that cat. It may mean printing it and scanning it, maybe running it through a couple of different scanning things. It is certainly not as simple as for the sighted person to just open it and look at it and say, oh, that looks a little hazy, but I can deal with that. So the challenge to me was, okay, how can we take a PDF, better, not even a PDF, an electronic document, right? A printable document. Look at it, throw a bunch of algorithms at it and see what the best one is, and then provide the output to the user in one click. And I posed that to the doer over here, and he's like, well, we could do blah, 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 blah. And that's what we've got. We've got a technology that can take a number of technology of print formats, printable formats as input, and then can convert them to a number of formats and output accessible formats, including tagged PDF, WCAG 2.1 compliant PDF, PDFs, including HTML, EPUB, DAISY, audio MP3, Braille, large print, and all at one click.
I want to come back for a minute. Matt, you were working in Microsoft. You're doing all these great things with the Narrator screen reader. And then I'm kind of assuming Mike gets in touch and says, I'm thinking of setting up NUMA solutions. I've got some great ideas. You guys clearly talked. What was the sort of thought process in your head? You're walking away from Microsoft, big corporate role. You were doing some clearly very exciting things to go back and work with Mike on a very new project. Was it scary or was it very exciting?
So I started working with Mike on the side on this new stuff. Starting, you know, about a year into my time at Microsoft. And honestly, even that early in, I was getting a little restless, as Mike could tell you. And I also honestly felt that I owed him this because he wound down Saratech, gave me his blessing to go pursue the job at Microsoft. And I felt that if he had a new product idea, that I should at least do a prototype of that so that we could maybe hand it off to other developers to finish up. But I felt that I should at least help him start up the new product that he wanted to do. And so I started working with Mike on the side on this document conversion product that eventually became Scribe, and kept working on the side on that for about a year and a half, something like that. And then, well, March 2020, we all know what happened then. Mike, I'll let you take it from there.
Go yeah, for it. Okay.
Yeah. So around January, the technology was like pretty much done by November, December of 2019. And we're like, okay, it's time to start pitching. And one of the things that was happening, Scribe comes in a number of different forms, meaning in different interfaces. It's all the same platform. It's just different ways of getting at what the platform does. And one of the things that had come up, and by the way, for before we continue, kudos to the Canadian government, because the Canadian government really gave us a lot of support as we developed Scribe, not financial support, but just testing, helping make sure that we stayed up to standards, kicking our butts about multilingual support, things like that. That, you know, thanks to all the folks at GC Canada, because without their firm help, we wouldn't have been able to come out with a product like we did. But January came around, and we're saying, okay, there's a problem in California. In California, was told to take 2.6 million documents and make them accessible within 2 years, and which is a physical impossibility. Mm. So 2 years later, they were able to, for $6 million, do 13,000 documents. The average comes out to about $17 a page. That does not scale well. Later research shows that it will take 400 years and $4 billion at that at that workflow for California to comply with its court order. On the other hand, Scribe, because it's a cloud-based service, can take these 2.5 million documents. And let's just say that each document has four pages. And they're not. They're more than that because they're government documents, right? But let's just say 10 million pages. And using Scribe's augmented document remediation protocols combined with Amazon's huge AWS service and cloud services, we can actually do about 10 million pages in a few days. And the beauty of Scribe is that it brings things to about between 94 and 96% accuracy, depending on what the quality of the document is, how familiar the platform is with the document. Because unlike other platforms, we learn augmented document remediation, it learns as we tell it, hey, that was one list, not two. That was an H1, not an H2. And as we are able to increase that accuracy, we will see the technology get smarter and smarter. And just for the record, WCAG 2.1 accessibility does not insist on 100% accessibility. It's actually quite open to interpretation. What we found as a community is that organizations that have done nothing about accessibility have been jumped on with both feet by all governments that say, okay, now since you did nothing, you've got to be 100% compliant in this ridiculously short amount of time. And what ended up happening was California ended up having to take 2.5 million documents offline for everyone, blind and sight alike. And because to this day, they're still gone.
And you have a blog post on the website about that, holding document hostage. Isn't that the whole concept, I suppose?
Yes.
So just let me go, in terms of the California example, they have all these documents that they want to make available online that need also to be accessible. Are they scanning printed pages and those images are going to Scribe? Is that the workflow?
The workflow is, well, there's a couple of different workflows. So California, because California was told they need to bring all of their documents to this accessible standard, they would use what we call our entire library conversion. Okay. And what that is we would literally just set the technology loose on the entire library of digital content, whether it be, you know, tagged PDF, untagged PDF, whatever it is, HTML. And basically for about $1 a page, we will create 8 versions of that document, including tagged PDF. And the other versions would be alternative versions like Braille, large print, MP3, et cetera.
And to be clear, they're not working with us yet. We're just talking about how they would work with us and how we were going to try to and how we will again try to sell it to them.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a great example of what is going on in dozens of places around the world. This is not just a US problem. This is a problem everywhere. Now, for folks that are not like California, where they have not been court ordered to complete to do everything, we actually have a piece of JavaScript that they can insert into their workflow, into their current content management system, that every time a printable piece of content is encountered on the website, we've got a little link in there that your screen reader sees that says, you know, create an accessible version of this document. And with one button push, you can convert it in real time to one of our various formats. And that content owners or content providers would just pay us a monthly fee of, you know, about $500 for the larger domains. Smaller domains are much less. So we really want to make the technology scalable, both financially and technically, for people according to their needs. And we also have, just for the record, we have an on-prem version of the technology that would be used for private law enforcement, HIPAA, you know, insurance processing, things where information cannot hit the internet.
So Scribe as a platform then, is the people who are going to use this most are the people who are submitting the documents to be made accessible. Is that correct?
Yeah, content owners, not necessarily content creators, but anyone who distributes content to a large, you know, to a group of a large group of people, or a group of people that may have print impairments.
Okay.
So, an example of that distinction would be Home Depot. Home Depot collects lots and lots of manuals from various manufacturers on their website. You know, we wouldn't go after every little appliance manufacturer. We would try to sell this to Home Depot to put the JavaScript widget on their website for those manuals to be converted on demand.
Okay, and then those files that are converted on demand and made available for everybody else to read will be back on the Home Depot website. Is that right?
Well, it depends. If they're just created by us, for just the electronic version, probably not. Because what happens is whenever you would select that, you would have the latest and greatest iteration of our technology creating it on the fly. However, if someone said, you know, this refrigerator manual, I just gotta have it in 100% accessible version and a human remediated version, we will provide Home Depot or whoever a one button click that will either link the individual to their human remediation group or to ours. And then we will turn around and take that human remediated document and retrain our system and say, look, you got this wrong, you got that wrong, you got the other wrong. and the system will learn, and then they will replace the fully human remediated version onto their website. A little convoluted, I know, but it's kind of the philosophy behind this, Stuart, is that we have great people that are doing document remediation right now. But when they retire, when they stop doing document remediation, they take the knowledge with them, and they never, you know, and you got to train somebody back up. You got to, there's lulls, and it's humans. We don't have enough time in the day and enough people on the planet that are willing to do this, to do all the document remediation for legacy documents that needs to be done. So this needs to be augmented. This needs to be machine assisted, which is why we're, you know, the biggest challenge we have, I think, is philosophical more than anything else right now.
Is there a way for an end user, let's just say somebody buys, as you mentioned there, a fridge or something, and they get a PDF user guide. Or is there, or might there be a way in the future that an end user can submit that to Scribe and get it back in an alternative format for a small fee? Or is that a model you're looking at?
It is, actually. My son David Calvo wrote a Scribe an extension for for Edge and for Chromium, you know, for Chromium based browsers basically, and that is going to be rolled out potentially at some point this year. We're just trying to, you know, Matt came on board and coming, it's a good way to bring Matt back into this one. What happened in March? In March, when COVID came, we basically had to put everything on hold. And that was still at Microsoft. And I was going to go to California and start pitching Scribe to the state to see if they could, you know, and it didn't happen. And you know, so we basically said, okay, Matt stayed in Washington doing his thing. And the first thing we did was release Scribe for free. And it's called Scribe for Education. And we released that free to teachers of the visually impaired for K-12, because we realized, oh my goodness, all these kids are without their resource departments that can give them documents. So we did that. And one day, I'll go back to the you know, what happened with how Scribe for Meetings came around. But the answer to your question is yes, we will be providing a way for people to do their own documents that they encounter in the future. And we'll probably roll it up into a service offering of some kind, like our Accessibility Anywhere package or something.
Okay, so March last year, you were launching this free solution, making it available for schools. Everybody was learning from home. Matt, you're still with Microsoft. When did you make the big move and say, I'm gonna work with Mike full time?
I finally made the big decision. I had shortly after we launched Scribe for Education, I had decided that at some point before too long, I was going to leave Microsoft and join Mike when the time was right. But I didn't know when that time was going to be. And so I think that this would be a good point in the narrative to introduce Scribe for Meetings. So Mike, why don't you talk about the initial spark of that product?
So as most things go with Matt and me, and they've been this way for the last 20 years, it's like, hey, Matt, dude, what do you think if this, and in this particular case, this was like, man, all these people are having all these stinking meetings and I can't read the screen content. You know, what can we do about that? And Matt gave it some thought and I said, you know, wouldn't it be great if, you know, everybody's given, you know, when you're visually impaired and you are frequenting meetings that the people that are providing these meetings know that you need the PowerPoints ahead of time. You may get the PowerPoint 5 minutes, 10 minutes ahead of time, and you get the PowerPoint for the meeting. You have to look at it, familiarize yourself with it, and then jump into this meeting and then determine from the context of the audio of the meeting, what in the world is being shown on the screen?
Yeah. Which slide are they on now, kind of thing?
Yeah. And we were like, I was like, you know, Matt, we're not going to be able to sell Scribe because it's a sale. We're changing an industry's ideas. We're looking at different ideologies of augmented document remediation versus human. And it's too much of a sales pitch. We're in the middle of a pandemic, you know, and
all the government agencies that we would talk to, they're all COVID all the time.
COVID. So the document remediation stuff basically went on a back shelf, and I'm like, okay, how are we going to make money with this technology? And Matt came up with a way for us to do just that. I am proud to introduce Scribe for Meetings, and it is currently available for Zoom. It will be available for other platforms later. First platform up will be Teams, and it'll be in the next little while. I think that you're going to be really amazed, Stuart, at how this technology works and how it allows you and me as blind participants in a meeting to actually enjoy the content being shown on the screen at the same time as the presenter is showing it. So if the presenter goes from slide one to slide three to slide four to slide two, back to slide one again, we're going to be able to not only look at that content on our screen at the same time, but the augmented document remediation processes going on in the background are going to make those slides totally accessible, totally convertible to all the different alternative printing formats that I told you about earlier, multilingual support. So if a slide has multiple languages on it, our platform is going to automatically create the accessible HTML that will make your screen reader speak in the correct language. And you know what? There is absolutely no knowledge of accessibility by the presenter has to be known. None at all. We can do that with graphics-based slides, and we can do that with text-based slides. The only thing that we are not good at right now, I would say, or the one thing I know we're not good at, we may come up with others, but is science and math. We're working on better, but science, math, those kinds of things I think are a challenge for us right now. But everything else is pretty good.
And there are so many scenarios. I've been at meetings. I know that there's been so many the last couple of months that everybody's been at. I'm sure it's happened to you guys. And as you say, somebody shares something, you're either frantically looking for the email attachment you received in advance of the meeting, or what has happened for me in many cases, I just sit through it and try to listen and take as best I can from the feedback other people are making during the meeting, maybe. So this gets around all that because it's happening in real time.
It does. And all that the meeting host or the presenter has to do is upload their PowerPoint slide deck, and they can do that as little as 5 minutes before the meeting begins. And then either they can give out a direct link into Scribe for Meetings for the blind attendee, or the blind attendee can go to scribeformeetings.com and put in their Zoom invite link, other platforms in the future, and we'll look it up. So we'll talk through the process in a little more detail as we get to the demo. But Stuart, to circle back to your question about me taking the leap and leaving Microsoft. So I started prototyping Scribe for Meetings in about August of last year, again, working on it on the side on weekends and whatever spare time I had on work days, while I was working at Microsoft. And after a few false starts and some trial and error, in early October of last year, I finally came up with a proof of concept and showed it to Mike in very rough prototype form, and we knew we had a product. And so I started thinking about, is this the time to make the jump? And I was honestly getting frustrated about the work that I was doing at Microsoft, and just how long it would take for any of that work to see the light of day. And honestly, how small my role was in the big picture, even of Windows accessibility, never mind all of Windows.
I love the nothing about us without us kind of thinking that's going around the marketplace and the industry and the community. I think it's great. And hats off to Microsoft and Apple and Google and Amazon and all the companies that have brought this community and its needs into their focus and incorporated us as viable consumers into their products. But not everything is for everybody. And Matt and I felt that it was that exact moment. Christmas time was coming along. The holidays were coming along. So we kids weren't in school. Kids weren't getting educated. So we had an open stretch of about a month and a half before kids went back to school that we could really just hammer at this thing and get it out there. And sure enough, we have done demonstrations in the last couple of weeks for some of the largest universities. We have others that are just kind of people that love the product, that evangelize it, do demos. And within 10, 15 minutes, it's like, where do we send the purchase order? You know, so it's working.
Okay. Now, and on that note, and we are going to get to actually look at this in a few minutes because I'm quite excited about the demo. I haven't seen this yet, but you guys are just getting this off the ground. How does it work? So if somebody comes to a meeting and they say, I've heard of Numa Solutions. I know these guys are doing this stuff. I can't read the slideshow. Do you say it to the meeting organizer? Do you say it to your university, your employer, or can you buy it yourself? How does that work?
Well, we have on the website, we have a number of tools that we're getting ready to release. And one of the things is called the SAC, the Self-Advocacy Kit. And these are a bunch of pre-written letters that an attendee can use to advocate for themselves. The platform doesn't just work for meetings. It works for webinars. And we'll get into pricing later. But what these letters do is they introduce Scribe for Meetings to the presenter and say, hey, you know, would you consider using this in your presentation. Mm. And those letters are geared at offices for the disabled in colleges, at HR and employment, at supervisors, at school boards for students, even at community organizations that are having meetings like, you know, associations, whatever that association be, a neighborhood association or whatever. And they allow the individual to self-advocate and to ask for that accommodation to be made.
Yeah, because sometimes when people want something, they're not sure how to ask for it, or they're not even sure maybe what they're asking for. So you've actually done that work by writing these letters, by having something that somebody can use as a template to hand to somebody else.
Yep.
Excellent. Okay. Now, we will come back to pricing in a while, but I think, are we at the point, Mike, where you can maybe show us a little bit about how this would work in a real-time environment? Because we are on a Zoom call right now.
Sure. Well, absolutely. So if you just got to the meeting, Mr. Stewart.
Yes, indeed.
And I am presenting today. And if you look in the chat for this Zoom meeting, there is a little blurb in there that was put in there by myself as the presenter of this meeting that basically says, hey, if you want to read this, if you want to see an accessible version of the meeting content, go to this link. And you can do that, or if you don't have, if for whatever reason the participant doesn't look at this Zoom chat or whatever, they can just go to...
the presenter forgot to share the link.
That too. They can just go to scribeformeetings.com, enter the Zoom invite URL right there, and bingo, they'll be jumped right into the slide content.
Okay, and you've kindly sent me in the chat a link that I can use. I have put this into the run window on my computer because that's how I open all my web links. So mm-hmm. I'm gonna open that link right now then, okay?
Yep.
Okay, so let me do this.
What's gonna happen when you do that is what we call the scribe bot is going to enter the Zoom meeting. And Stuart, since you are actually the host of the meeting, you will need to let it in.
Okay, so I let the bot in. So let me get to open this link first.
Run dialogue. Type the name of a program.
So my JAWS is asking me to type the name of a program, document, etc. I'm pasting the link in here.
https://.
And I'm going to press enter.
desktop. Untitled dash scribe for meetings left parent untitled.
Scribe for meetings.
Untitled no edit. Please wait semicolon scribe for meetings is preparing to provide access to the content in this meeting period.
Okay. Yep. And what it's doing right now is it's logging into Zoom and it's going to go knock on your virtual door.
Okay.
And I'm watching the participants area to see
scribe
when
for
when
meetings
it shows
has connected to Zoom.
Scribe for meetings has connected to Zoom. We did hear somebody in our waiting room.
Okay, and I can admit.
You can admit them, indeed. Thank you very much. Mike is the host, co-host. I can hear that person's come in.
Scribe for meetings has left the waiting
and there
room.
There he is. And what does the scribe bot
scribe
do?
Scribe for meetings
well,
has joined
right
the
now,
meeting.
What the scribe bot does is it simply looks at the screen and says, oh, he's showing the first slide of the presentation that was previously uploaded that I already made accessible. So let me show that to the participants. So what we're going to do is we're going to come here.
So you're going to share your screen now, Mike,
yes,
with us. Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. And I'm sitting in still in my Microsoft Edge screen.
Stuart Lawler demo dash scribe for meetings.
It says Stuart Lawler demo. And, so I'm sitting here as though I'm waiting for Mike to, I get a little audio sound there.
Welcome to our ACPS class today. Participants, if you'll look on your screen.
Let me have a look.
Heading level 2 left bracket 1.01 right bracket left bracket today apostrophe estate right bracket left bracket heading level 2 left bracket 1.01
so
right bracket
headings.
Left bracket today apostrophe estate right
today's
bracket left
date.
Bracket instructor name right
instructor
bracket
name.
Heading level 2 left.
So I'm reading through your content.
Correct. And now if I decide that I'm going to go to the next slide, answering the following on paper.
Stuart Lawler, heading level 1, answer the following on paper, colon.
Answer the following on paper. What is your name and grade? Okay. So, and every time you're changing slide, I'm getting that little audio cue.
Correct. So if I want to jump down to a couple, now I went down to about the fifth slide in the deck or sixth.
Stuart, heading level 1, this class, colon, AP Computer
Science,
equivalent to 1 semester of intro CS in college.
Yep. Excellent. So, and this is happening in real time straight away. My browser is showing that content.
Right. And if I jump around, so for example, and so you can show why should you learn computer science?
Heading level 1, why should you learn computer science? Questions.
Sure enough, that's what
problem solving
says.
And computational thinking.
Part of everything we do exclaim.
Future opportunities in computing are without boundaries. But oh my goodness, we forgot to show you something on the previous slide. If you look here, it's
heading
equivalent
level
to one semester of
AP,
whatever.
Equivalent to 1 semester of intro,
to 1 semester
CS,
of intro
in
CS in college.
Thank you. There you go. Now, the platform, what it's done is if there's links in there, right, as there are, that lead you to websites, you can click on those links. They will open up in a new window. You can look at it for a second and then put it away.
And go
then
back
close
to
it back
your
and
slides.
Yeah. Right back to your slide deck. Eventually, what we're going to, and when I say eventually, I mean probably within a little while of this being published, we're going to be having what we call internally the DVR mode. And it's so sticky that it'll probably stay that way. But what it does is it'll allow you as an attendee to go back through the slides I've already shown.
I was
in
just,
case you need to take notes or pull something off of them.
I was just
whatever.
About to ask you that. Is there a way to go back?
Yeah.
So
and that's the biggest request we get. And the other thing is you'll be able to pause the flow of the presentation. So, for example, let's say you want to write this down and I'm going to jump onto the this is a multilingual slide now. Well, you don't want to do that. So you would pause the presentation on your side. And then when you're ready to get back with the program, you just click a button and it would just jump you right here to where I am. And you could go backwards and see what you missed. Kind of like the way your DVR works on your television.
Would that equally work? And again, I suppose you could say, yes, you could email something to somebody. But would that equally work in the same way? Say you had a Word document in a meeting and you're opening the Word document and you're making reference to it or to particular
the
sections.
The second most requested thing we've run into. And the short answer is no, not yet. And that's an answer, by the way, that you might as well get used to hearing from this company when we don't do something. It's not no, it'll never happen unless it limits our capacity somehow as a community. But no, not yet. I mean, generally, what we found is with really good thinking and understanding of a problem when it comes to the area of technology we've chosen to work in, there is very little that with time, resources, and advancements from other companies. Because remember, we're not developing, we're developing the glue that holds all these amazing technologies that Microsoft and Google and Amazon and Apple are leveraging. And
don't forget open source.
And open source. We are doing all of these things and we're putting them together into our own special recipe. So what we're really doing, we're packaging and we're looking at innovative ways to use these technologies that others have made their life's goal, and we're packaging it to do ours. So not yet is something you'll probably hear from us a lot when we don't do something.
And you know, but I would say that is absolutely okay, given the amount of time you've been around and you've only really got going with this stuff. It's incredible that we're seeing this. We're seeing live slide sharings updating automatically, automatic alt text and stuff being added. It's fantastic.
We want international participation in this too, Stuart. Your podcast gets a lot of international recognition. And we do not want this to be a U.S. thing. This is not a U.S. thing. We're all, if there's one thing I've learned about being blind, is whether you're blind and we don't even have to speak the same language. We have the same challenges. Yeah. We have the same needs. And the cost for this technology is so economical. And we did that on purpose. We want to make enough to make the technology be profitable for us, obviously. But more than that, we want it to be ubiquitous and we want it to be available everywhere. And the only way that that's going to happen is if we make it financially feasible and also readily available. We can do things like keep your own content in your own country so that you don't need to worry about, you know, if all your stuff is going across the pond and getting into another country's jurisdiction for employers. And it's just important for, if there's an opportunity for you to do a presentation for people that are going to participate in that presentation that may have a print impairment, come to us. You know, it's as necessary as captioning. And now that it's here, we could say it's the law, blah, 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 but it's just the right thing to do.
Okay. And I just want to briefly then ask around the pricing, because we did mention pricing previously. Is it kind of subscription based, or are you kind of looking at per users or the volume of content that maybe an institution or a corporate might need to share?
Right. So the largest, let's talk about two things. We've got meetings and we've got webinars. Okay. And webinars is really easy. For organization right now, while we're in beta for the next few months, and that could be, you know, end of March, beginning of April, that we come out of beta after CSUN. We are going to be this is going to be the price structure for webinars, and it's going to be $99 a webinar for any organization that does not serve the visually impaired, but will have, you know, the visually impaired as possible attendees.
Yeah.
And for organizations that do serve the needs of the visually impaired, and that includes AT companies, it is absolutely free to use.
Okay.
We are charging nothing. Mm-hmm.
For webinars.
Now for meetings, on the other hand, for enterprise, it's $2,500 a year, and that includes university campuses, and that's unlimited users, unlimited meetings, just a full go. We are going to have a personal version for somebody that is an independent person. That's just one guy that has a bunch of meetings with a bunch of blind people. And that's going to be about $25 a month. And there's going to be single meeting prices. I don't want to get confusing in the price structure, but it's all going to be on the website. But the billing will begin. So you'll get kind of an idea. And if you want to try the technology, it's going to be, I know that the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to do single one-offs for like $10 for a meeting. So you can go and kick the tires. You know, there's not going to be a free tier of mm-hmm. this for individuals that they can take it for a spin.
Yeah. Okay. But the point is, you, and I think it's really key that you said at the beginning, that it's for everyone. It's not, you know, you want to make this worldwide. We're all visually impaired. We're all blind. We're all low vision, whatever. We all face the same access barriers. And here's a hugely powerful solution, making big changes.
No, it's important that people like you really buy in and help us spread the word. We can just make the stuff, but it's folks like yourself and your listeners looking at the technology, talking to us about the technology, and you know, and really holding us accountable and saying, you know, this is what it really does, this is what it really doesn't, and this is what we'd like it to do.
I suspect you guys, you're going to have a very, very busy year ahead. Thank you so much for taking time to come on the show today. Just before we let you go, Mike, people who want to know more and read, and I have already said people should go on the website and read some of the blog posts because they're really good. How can they find you guys?
Sure. Of course, because we're dealing with a blind audience, we wanted to make a joke of it and call it Pneuma with a P. I'm kidding. But it's pneumasolutions.com. That's Pneuma solutions.com. And there you can sign up for our emails. We will not be putting ourselves on Facebook or Twitter. No, thank you for the drama and all the other stuff that's been going on with those platforms. If you want to know what we're doing, visit us, listen to podcasts like this. But, you know, most of all, sign up for our email list. We're not going to sell your information. We're not going to bombard you with useless information. And we have a number of lists that you can sign up for that have to do with either business to business or business to consumer. So we're never going to send you information that you don't want. And you can read also about the Serotech products that are now part of the Pneuma Solutions offering.
That's a really good point, because I did at the very start, I was thinking, I need to ask that. So some of the Serotech products are still available now under the Pneuma stable or Pneuma family, is that right?
That's correct. That would be Sero. And Sero is available for your favorite platforms, just about all of them, with the exception of Linux.
I might be doing something about that soon.
Oh, there you go. There's your next challenge.
In my copious spare time.
As if you weren't busy enough. Yeah. I have very happy memories, by the way, just to kind of close off on some of the stuff you've done in the past. I think like 2011, 2012, when Facebook was relatively, I guess, new. I was using something that you guys developed called the Socializer.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Back when Facebook was a lot more open than it is now.
Guys, you're busy. Exciting times to come with Pneuma Solutions. Mike and Matt, I suppose it's wonderful to know you're back with us, back in the accessibility. I know you never really went away, but you're very much back now. And thank you for sharing so much of your time and your philosophy and your story on this podcast. I'd love to stay in touch, so maybe we could get you back maybe, you know, later in the year, or just to check in.
Anytime.
But for the moment, thanks Emil for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Mike Calvo and Matt Campbell there. I must say, I thoroughly enjoyed that discussion. Not just the great chat, and we were chatting quite a bit off air after the show as well, but also just the excitement, that demonstration, the fact that we will be able to, in real time, at the very same time, view these PowerPoint slideshows in meetings and webinars is something very exciting. More information at pneumasolutions.com, and if you're interested, all the details are on the website. As I said on the show earlier on, highly recommend reading the blog. There's lots of good stuff there. That's just about it for this edition of the show, but we're back soon. Until then, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight and Sound and Technology, stay safe and stay well, and please stay at home. Bye-bye.